Individuals were most satisfied with a gift when it was presented in elaborate paper and least satisfied with a gift when it was not wrapped, even though it was an identical gift in each case. The psychologists proposed that this result is related to a learned response that associates wrapped packages with happy events in life, thus evoking a happier mood. So the next time you give a gift, remember, a little wrapping paper goes a long way. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Andrew Logeman with help from Edward Hurt in Psychological and Brain Sciences. I'm Don Glass.
In sports, Dinara Safina has advanced to the third round of the U.S. Open. The sixth-seeded Russian defeated Italy's Roberta Vinci 6-4, 6-3 in today's opening match in Arthur Ashe Stadium. 16 seasons on NHL ice is enough for Stu Barnes. He's retiring at the age of 37, joining the Dallas staff as an assistant to head coach Dave Tippett. Barnes played the final 329 of his 1,136 NHL games in a Stars uniform. Instant Replay makes its debut tonight at Wrigley Field, where the Chicago Cubs face the Philadelphia Phillies in the opener of a four-game series between playoff contenders. The Cubs are a Major League best 83-50, while the Phillies are 73-60. Chicago plays 26 of its last 29 games against teams currently above 500. The Chicago Bears are in Ohio tonight to take on the Cleveland Browns. One of the teams will get its first win because both are 0-3 in the preseason. The St. Louis Rams are on the road for their preseason finale against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Rams are 2-1 so far, while the Chiefs are 1-2. And Peyton Manning is not expected to play tonight in the Indianapolis Colts' final preseason game. Back in practice this week after knee surgery last month, Manning has looked good, but the Colts do not plan to use him tonight against the Bengals. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Pretty Nails and Mr. John's School of Cosmetology.
When Barack Obama accepts the Democratic nomination tonight, it will be in a football stadium that seats 75,000 people. Tonight, the stadium will have giant video screens, a light show, and music. It will feel a lot like a rock concert. That might be a new experience for many of the elected officials and delegates. NPR sent reporter Robert Smith to a Bruce Springsteen show in Pennsylvania to get some advice for delegates on proper stadium etiquette.
In the parking lot of Hershey Park Stadium, the hardcore Springsteen fans have assembled early. There are beers to drink and Born to Run on the car stereo. Catherine Regal says if you want to rock out in a stadium, you have to perfect the art of the tailgate.
We brought tenderloin, we brought some potatoes.
So live it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the tailgaters here are sitting around listening to Bruce Springsteen. Would you recommend in Denver that they sit around and listen to old Barack Obama speeches?
They could do that.
Get excited?
They could. I think that would be a good thing. That's what we're doing here. We're getting all psyched.
You see, rock concerts are tribal events, and it's all about fitting in. Regal says Obama fans should go all the way tonight. Wear the T-shirt. Paint the face with the big O.
You need to participate in it. You need to sing. You need to dance. That's the thing that makes it the most exciting.
And then if you're really into it, you get on somebody's shoulders, right?
Well, you can. If you weigh a little enough, yes, you may.
But if Democratic delegates haven't been to a rock concert in years, they may find that some things have changed. With all the no-smoking rules, don't expect to hold up your lighter during the emotional parts of Barack Obama's speech. At concerts these days, people hold their glowing cell phones aloft. And a hearty applause may have worked in the small arena, but in a stadium, you have to scream your head off. Diane Graziosi and Joe Tomtition show me the Springsteen way.
Woo!
So you would say the key is to get up in a high register, to clap and go, woo-hoo!
Born to run, baby! Woo!
Okay, so let me transcribe that. That was, Booyah Right Baby, is that right?
Born to Run Baby.
Tom Titian has been to hundreds of concerts, he says. He can answer even the most delicate concert etiquette question.
It's still funny to scream out Freebird at a concert?
Yes, it still is. I scream it all the time.
So would you advise delegates to the Democratic National Convention at some point to scream out Freebird to Barack Obama? Would that be funny?
It would be funny because I'm a Republican. I would find that hilarious.
Democrats, not so much. Right before the lights went down in the stadium, I ran into Sean Drury. He says there's lots of similarities between Springsteen fans and Obama supporters. They both have dedication and they both have enthusiasm. But he warns them, don't get carried away tonight in Denver.
Don't shout out while the artist, or in this case, the speaker, is speaking.
Don't shout out.
Absolutely not.
Don't yell out, do the one about change.
Yeah, or don't, we love you, Barack. Yeah, he knows that, otherwise he wouldn't be there. I mean, etiquette is just basically let the speaker speak. I kind of wish more of the political conventions were like rock concerts. Then they wouldn't have an hour of primetime television. They'd be on a lot longer.
My interviews are officially over when Springsteen takes the stage. Rule number one in rock or politics, enjoy the show. Robert Smith, NPR News.
Well, I'm gonna raise a fuss, I'm gonna raise a hog.
There is enormous interest in this year's presidential campaign, and tonight, after Senator Barack Obama accepts his party's nomination, we're interested in what you're thinking. Join NPR's Neil Conan for an election call-in special from NPR News after the convention coverage tonight. That's here on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Columbia, Missouri is a small city with a population of about 100,000 people. It has long sustained two daily newspapers. One of those papers is attached to the University of Missouri, which has the country's oldest school of journalism. Like a lot of dailies these days, the School of Journalism's newspaper is struggling financially. Sarah Whitmire, a member station KBIA, has more.
For the past century, Columbia's had two papers. The Tribune is the evening paper. It's been in the Waters family nearly since the beginning. The Missourian is the morning paper. It's located on the University of Missouri's campus and staffed by faculty editors and student reporters.
What else have we got cooking that you all are going to be working on that we can expect through the weekend? Yeah.
The Missourian is still able to compete with the larger circulating Tribune because it's subsidized by the university. But with the school in financial straits and looking to make cuts, the Missourian is a target because it's running a deficit expected to exceed $1 million. But those who work at the Missourian say it's more than just a newspaper. It's about maintaining a training ground for the nation's journalists. Chad Day is the assistant city editor at the Missourian and edits his fellow students' copy. He says what the Missourian offers is sink or swim training.
See anything come in obit-wise, just go ahead and pick it up and then just let me know and write the last name down in obit.
What I'm reporting on are the same thing that a professional newspaper is reporting on anywhere else, and we hold ourselves to the same type of professional standards.
Some think the paper should only publish online. Others argue it should continue to be subsidized as much as necessary by the university. And some are calling for a partnership with the city's second daily, the Tribune.
And Henry J. Waters III. I'm known as Hank more than Henry J.
Hank Waters is the editor and publisher of the Columbia Tribune. Not surprisingly, he likes the idea of working out an arrangement with the Missourian. In exchange for picking up printing costs, the Tribune would keep the Missourian's ad revenue and gain access to its highly desirable campus readership.
There's some very good student newspapers and other print newspapers at other journalism schools that are not commercial. They didn't try to go out and compete in the marketplace, but they provided good standards for kids to write. That part's important.
It's clear that Hank Waters is a businessman who needs to turn a profit. It's less clear how his style would jibe with the mission of what he terms a student newspaper. The two papers have always been competitors, and some criticize any arrangement with the Tribune as getting in bed with Hank. Dan Potter is the general manager of the Columbia Missourian. He's heard from alumni and community members since news of the paper's financial situation broke and says it's clear they don't want the paper to get very far away from what it's doing now.
I have a very romantic view about the Missourian. We give birth to so many people that go on to become managing editor of the New York Times or Jim Lehrer, you know, who's a graduate of ours. We give birth to so many people that make such a difference to this country and democracy that I think we're one of the most important daily newspapers in the world.
Many of those alumni who started their careers working at the Missourian return to campus next month for the paper's centennial celebration. But the party will take place under a cloud of uncertainty. The publishing board isn't expected to reach a decision until after the centennial. In the meantime, all those connected with the paper will continue to search for answers about what to do with both the Missourian and the declining fortunes of newspapers across the country. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Whitmire in Columbia, Missouri.
Picking a place to live can be an environmental decision. Some people argue if you can walk to everything you need, you'll stay out of your car and that will cut air pollution. But how do you compare how walkable one place is to another? Sean Ali looks at a website that aims to make that a breeze.
When urban planners want to know exactly how walkable a neighborhood is, they commission a study and they get results in weeks or months. One computer programmer says this approach is just pokey.
And so we built a piece of software that let anyone look up what they could walk to from their address.
Matt Lerner helped build a website called walkscore.com. You don't have to be an urban planner to use it. Anyone can just type in an address and...
We go through and tell you all of the closest, you know, grocery stores, restaurants, coffee shops, schools, parks, retail stores, so that you can see exactly what that neighborhood looks like.
Walkscore.com also spits out a number between 0 and 100. If a place scores above 90, the site calls that a walker's paradise. Lerner says the computer ignores stuff like weather and hills, but there's a reason behind that.
Research on why people walk has shown that the number one predictor of whether people will walk is whether there's something good nearby to walk to.
This is all well and good, but does Walkscore.com really work? I want to test that out, so I ask Lerner to score a Chicago neighborhood close to me.
So if you look at Logan Square, you can see that it has a walk score of 86. There's a huge diversity of businesses. And so if you're living near Logan Square, you can get by on a day-to-day basis, probably without getting in your car very often, or even owning a car, perhaps.
Really? Well, I head to Logan Square to check this out. And I ask people, does the neighborhood deserve this high score?
Yes, you can really minimize your use of a car.
We've got a movie theater. We've got a grocery store. We've got lots of restaurants and bars.
Everything is close, you know, even the jewelry stores, furniture stores, grocery stores, everything is pretty close, so it's pretty easy to get around well.
All right, well, most of the people that I speak to in this neighborhood say the website's pretty much got it right. This is a very walkable neighborhood. But there's a neighborhood activist who tries to make the area more walkable. His name is Ben Helfand, and he's not necessarily convinced that the website's got it 100% right. He says it leaves out some things. For example, this.
You're talking about kids wanting to walk to school? That house? That's a barrier.
Ben Helfand says the website doesn't just miss dogs in this area. It misses other things that might intimidate walkers.
They should factor in these things that are known to decrease the walkability of a neighborhood. A big gas station complex. Drive-through bank, which is right behind us.
Only because they're hard to walk by, that all the cars are coming in and out.
And because they disincentivize people getting out of their car, because they're designed to keep people in their cars.
Now, the programmers admit that the walkscore.com website actually leaves out a lot. Helfand says he's a fan of the site, it's just that it's tailored to one purpose.
It seems like their real target audience is people who are moving. And they want walkability to be a factor in that choice.
Helfand says the site gives the impression that people interested in walkability have only one choice to make, where to live. He wants them to make lots of choices over time. He wants them to fix bad sidewalks, tame scary dogs, and support zoning laws that favor walking over driving. Helfand says if that happens enough, we can make new walkable neighborhoods, not just rank the ones that already exist. For the Environment Report, I'm Sean Ali.
Bicycles are about as green as you can get. They're economical and provide great exercise. But a lot of people draw the line at hunching over those skinny, hard seats. There are bikes that offer more ways to ride, whatever your age or size, Lissy Martin reports.
This pump gets used a lot, so sometimes it doesn't want to stand.
The air pump beats the gas pump every time. Bikes are pretty simple to use. No gas, no bus fare. Check the tires and you're good to go. A lot of people who don't bike now wish they could too. And that's where recumbent bikes can help.
A recumbent is a bike where you sit down with your feet out in front of you, and it's comfortable like your office chair. It's comfortable like the chair you watch TV in. It puts you in a seated position like the car you drive.
That's Peter Stoll. 30 years ago, he took a one-room schoolhouse and turned it into a business called The Bicycle Man. The small store in western New York has become a magnet for shoppers interested in bikes that feel good.
Where are you guys coming from?
Ottawa, Canada.
Yeah, locals.
People regularly travel long distances to check out the extra-large selection.
We have a couple kinds of customers, and one is the customer who is a serious road bike geek for decades, and he just got a report from the doctor saying you can't because of wrists, neck, prostate, something. You can't ride anymore. Or maybe runner can't run anymore.
Still sees plenty of brand-new bikers, too. They come in every age and shape. His motto is ride before you decide, because there's so many variables to consider.
You know, if you look at a racing bike, you give up everything for speed. But did you want speed or comfort or durability or foldability? Or would you like me to show you the compromises on our design?
Still spends a lot of time testing and tinkering in the shop out back. He's on a quest to build even better bikes. No single style can do everything for everyone, but Still says recumbents can solve a number of common problems.
If you're uncomfortable, like have a pain issue on a traditional bicycle, this will probably eliminate it. If it's a hip or a knee issue, maybe it won't help. If it's a balance issue, then maybe a trike recumbent with three wheels.
I had to try the cool trike bikes. I wasn't sure what to expect. They were amazing, really low and super fast, but they needed a lot of room to turn. Still says trike bikes give some of his physically challenged customers the bike freedom the rest of us take for granted.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you? Good.
Saturdays get busy. I asked John and Deb Wegman why they bother to drive 90 minutes from Rochester.
My wife. Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Be honest.
Well, we wanted to try them because they're supposed to be very comfortable and a different kind of ride. And this is the place to come because you can't find them anywhere else. All the other bike shops have maybe one. And you can test drive it in the parking lot for 100 yards, maybe.
And you're about to go out on a ride of as long as you want.
Right. And we can come back and try another one and do it again if we want to.
Recumbents are hard to find. They can cost a bit more, too. But Stoll says any good bike that's cared for should last for years. After maybe 20 minutes, John and Deb come back.
That was a lot of fun. Very comfortable ride.
It was great. Yeah, I'm actually going to have him change the seat on that one because I'm interested in the wider
try
seat.
Try that bigger
so,
seat.
Yeah.
The Bicycle Man carries basic recumbents all the way to slick racers. They sell regular bikes, too. Whatever buyers choose, Peter Stoll recommends taking enough time to find the right bike for each body. He says comfortable bikes get ridden. The rest just sit around and rust. Recumbent bikes are beginning